But first, we're taking you to Marysville, where a proposed school district rule change would require students to get their parents' permission to join clubs, including LGBTQ groups. Many students and families in the district say this policy, which hasn't been enacted yet, would limit young people's access to support at school.
They have those safe spaces at school for a reason, so they don't have to come to their parents and be like, this is who I am, and have to fear that their parents could kick them out or something.
That was student Haley Brewster speaking to King 5. She runs her school's LGBTQ Alliance Club. Some community members, though, say this policy affirms their rights as parents.
Parents have every right to guide their children according to their family values. It is not up to the school.
Here to talk about the debate is the Daily Herald of Everett's Isabella Breda. Hi, Isabella. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And this would be the first policy of its kind in the state. Where did it come from? Why do supporters think that this is necessary?
Sure. And it's funny you mentioned that because I started asking folks from the OSPI and from the ACLU of Washington about if they'd ever heard of other districts having a policy, anything like this. The only one I found that's similar was an attempt to pass something like this. There was a proposal almost identical to this that also came out of students proposing to form clubs for LGBTQ youth in Idaho, and that was like a decade ago. This one specifically started being discussed after parents and school board members caught wind of plans to create a couple of safe space clubs at elementary schools. And those clubs were aimed to support LGBTQ youth and provide them just kind of a place to hang out and chill and connect with their counselors and teachers before school once a week.
And some parents in the district are supporting this policy in addition to several members of the school board. What are they saying about the proposal?
I think this really originated from those parents, at least through social media conversations. When they caught wind, like I said before, of this proposal to add these clubs, and specifically it was the clubs for LGBTQ youth, there are conversations on Facebook about how they could get involved and possibly like prohibit their students from going to these clubs if they're not comfortable. And from those conversations on social media, school board members, you know, started taking those before the school board and considering ways that they could heighten parental involvement, parental oversight. And these parents are essentially saying at that age, students may not have the ability to form decisions on what's good or right for them. And so they feel that they need to have some say over what their kids are doing when they're not around.
And obviously, because this was proposed in response to the safe spaces groups in elementary schools, LGBTQ supporters and students, parents who may be LGBTQ themselves or have students who are, they are taking this as a targeted attack on gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual identity and folks in the school district. What are they saying?
So students and teachers came out in early February when there was some controversy around these proposed clubs and, you know, basically defended the need for the club. Teachers came before the school board and shared statistics of suicide among LGBTQ youth. They even shared one student's story who ultimately ended up dying by suicide, lacking the resources and the support in the community that they needed. And these same teachers returned just last week to basically ask school board members, you know, how did you sit there and listen to us defend the need for students to have access to these clubs, especially when they may not have, you know, a safe space at home to talk about these things. They may not be comfortable coming out to their parents, or they may just be grappling with kind of their thoughts and feelings. You know, they came before the school board and asked, you know, why would they propose something like this that would ultimately harm students? And these are obviously the people that work directly with students that are questioning the school board's actions.
Yeah, to be clear, if a student wanted to join one of these clubs under this policy, if it does go forward, they would have to get a signed permission slip or some other type of explicit permission from their guardian or parent. And so it would explicitly require them to be out to their family. And that's a really dicey proposition for some youth. And we know that many LGBTQ plus youth are not welcomed in their home. They have a higher rate of homelessness. I mean, there are a lot of reasons that youth is not necessarily comfortable with being out to their parents, right?
Yeah, that's right. And that's something that State Representative Emily Wicks came forward before the school board to bring up last week when it was first proposed. And ultimately, after hearing her testimony, and she's worked with several agencies in the area that serve homeless youth, and she was saying that working there, she realized that a large proportion of those youth are LGBTQ and, you know, ultimately had difficult situations at home and they didn't have that safe space. And she reiterated that the point of having clubs like this is to be able to offer that.
These conversations around parental rights and, you know, having more parental control over what happens in a classroom, it's really echoing this culture war flashpoint that we see over sexual orientation and gender identity in other parts of the country where conservatives are trying to put limits on what happens in schools. Florida's Don't Say Gay legislation is probably the most watched example, which prohibits instruction about gender identity or sexuality for elementary school aged kids through third grade. Governor Ron DeSantis calls conversations about LGBTQ issues woke gender ideology. Now, parents will say, you know, they feel like especially younger children, it's not age appropriate to discuss certain issues in the classroom. Do you hear some of the same rhetoric that we see in other parts of the country in discussions in Marysville?
Yeah, and I think that's something that's even been cited. You know, it was ultimately happening at the same time that Florida House of Representatives passed that Don't Say Gay bill, that they were discussing whether or not this club should be permitted to exist in Marysville schools. And, you know, one school board member brought up the movement across the U.S. that he sees and the idea that schools are trying to take responsibility away from parents and the rhetoric surrounding whether or not this is an age-appropriate topic for kids. And you saw school counselors come before the school board and bring in some of their research and their understanding of the issue and their work with kids and ultimately kind of discredit that argument.
Do LGBTQ youth and teachers feel supported in Marysville School District by the administration and by folks who make the decisions?
From what it sounds like, no, I'm not going to speak for them, but I know there's definitely been some concern about whether or not they are going to have that ongoing support that they may have had from previous school boards.
On Monday night, the school board of directors voted 4-1 to revise this policy to apply it to students in elementary schools and middle schools, but not high schoolers. So high schoolers could choose to join groups without their parents' permission, but that's not the case for middle schoolers and younger kids. Did the directors talk about why they decided to revise this policy? What was the reaction to that?
I think a lot of that was coming out of the idea, again, that, you know, parents and school board members who are parents feel that students have a certain amount of autonomy once they're in high school. They're able to go to doctor's appointments by themselves at 13, and they just have some say in their day-to-day life, what sports they can join, et cetera. They don't need a ride at a certain age to get there. And the idea behind that, again, may be wrapped into the how age appropriate these clubs are for the younger students. And that's ultimately who they were attempting to target when they first began discussing this.
The state superintendent of public instruction, Chris Reichdahl, has weighed in on this. The state superintendent's office is against this policy and again, calling it unprecedented for Washington State. Do we know if it would stand a legal challenge?
Yeah, that's a great question. And in talking to leaders from the ACLU and the OSPI, it sounds like there's not a great deal of legal guidance, at least in federal and state laws. However, in some angles, and specifically looking at students, LGBTQ youth, that would be ultimately forced to come out to their parents, that would not really stand against OSPI guidelines that say that schools have to protect students' private information, such as, you know, what pronouns they prefer to use and their gender identity.
I'm talking with Isabella Breda with the Everett Herald about a policy that's put forward in Marysville schools to require parental permission to join non-curricular student groups. And again, a Monday vote by the school board made this a policy that would apply to middle schoolers and younger. Isabella, a final vote on this policy is tentatively scheduled for June 6th. What happens in the meantime? What are groups who are for and against this policy doing?
Well, I've even connected with some high schoolers, across the region, and they're looking at ways that they can urge the school board, to vote no on this and provide those protections that they say are necessary for LGBTQ students, like having those access to those clubs without getting their parents' consent and having to ultimately out themselves. I know state lawmakers are going to continue speaking against the ordinance and the policy, and I expect to see more sign waving like we saw before Monday's meeting.
Before we go, Isabella, I also wanted to talk to you about an update on the proposed ordinance before the Edmonds City Council. We talked to you about that last week. It would make it illegal for anyone to occupy public property overnight if they refuse shelter. And here's Vivian Olson, the Edmonds City Council president, and what she told me last week about the ordinance that she introduced.
You know, this is, for starters, a misdemeanor and not a felony charge. And, in fairness, I would say that it's the refusal to accept the shelter that's being criminalized, not the state of homelessness.
And I also talked to Marianne Dillon with the YWCA of Snohomish County, who opposes the change.
Part of that ordinance would require residents, unhoused residents, to obtain shelter or motel space in order to comply. And there is no shelter or motel space in the city of Edmonds currently.
Isabella, that ordinance passed 5-2 last night. You covered the meeting. This, of course, was a controversial decision. What happened to push it over the finish line?
You know, I think it was going to pass from the start. The majority of the council had expressed support for the ordinance from the time it was first introduced in April. You know, ultimately, something that may have made it a little more palatable for some of the council members who may have been on the fence was limiting the distance that shelter had to be available to within a 35-mile radius. Now, looking at that on a map, that could mean people could be taken as far as Renton. And again, the critics' argument that, you know, removing people from the community that they're comfortable in, the community that they probably became homeless in, it could be detrimental, could disconnect them from the resources they're familiar with. And ultimately, it's placing the burden of having that available shelter on other cities.
And what does available mean in this case, as you say, 35 miles away? That's really far away from Edmonds. There's currently no homeless shelter in the city of Edmonds, as we've discussed before. Did the council members talk about the future of that and looking at expanding homeless services in town?
Sure. And there was even a proposal by Councilmember Laura Johnson, one of the more progressive council members, to, you know, first look at creating a hotel respite program or some sort of shelter before implementing the ordinance or just enacting it. That failed 5-2, her proposal. But the Human Services Deputy Director did say that she's got her marching orders and, you know, their two-person department is going to be looking at how they can begin to create shelter. So there's not as much concern about how far people are going to be taken.
You know who the hardest working reporter in the North End is? It's Isabella Breda with the Everett Herald, covering Edmonds, Marysville, Lake Stevens, as well as the Tulalip tribes. Isabella, thank you so much for joining us to update us on both what's happening in Marysville and also this Edmonds vote on camping in public spaces. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, happy to be here.
And if you want to follow Isabella's reporting, you can check it out at heraldnet.com. Back with more Soundside in a minute.